The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, after the blah of the Japan national team over the international break, J1 certainly hit us with some football over the weekend.
Oh yeah, no blah here. This was an excellent weekend of football. I don't know necessarily quality-wise in certain circumstances. There's a lot of rubbish going around, but Chaos Energy J League was in full swing and it was delightful to see.
Yes, this round was definitely the poster child, I think, for Chaos Energy J League so far this year. We have obviously had some action-packed match days so far, but yeah, up and down the country there were goals flying in here, there, and everywhere. Some of some terrific quality, some absolutely laid on a plate for opponents. And yes, we'll get to all of it in just a moment. And we'll also welcome back two special guests to the podcast, Chris from J-League Journeys, and also Manny, who is our new Yokohama FC correspondent, to check in on how the Mitsuzawa club is faring six games into their return to J1. So Chris is first cab off the rank, and we'll throw to him right now. Our first guest this week is making his first appearance of 2023. He's part of the dynamic J-League Journeys duo. It's a big welcome back to J-Talk to Chris. Welcome back to the pod, mate.
Thank you very much. What an introduction. Yeah, I mean, it's me again. I think next time we'll try and get Lola one, maybe spread the love a little bit. But yeah, thanks for reaching out. Pleasure to be back. Thank you.
No worries. Part of me just wants to cut right to the chase, Chris, and ask you what the Hiroshima players picked up at the convenience store after they defeated Kashima. You and Lola were at that game. But before we move on to the events of Saturday, just as a whole, what's it been like for you and Lola getting back to proper J-League atmospheres? I know you started your channel while, you know, COVID was going on and there were restrictions on crowd numbers, of course, and restrictions on chanting, etc., etc. So you weren't really able to bring the full J-League experience to the world. But now that we've been able to put all those restrictions in the rearview mirror, how's it been to be back inside, you know, the proper atmosphere this year?
Right, yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, for those of those, well, those of our fans that watch the channel regularly, they might have seen that we haven't been too active this year. Actually, we've had a few things going on, but we're trying to get back into seeing as many games as possible, as often as possible, obviously. But from what we have seen, it's been 100,000,000,000 times better than it has been over the last year or 2 years ago, etc. People just seem so much more relaxed, which is nice. There used to be a kind of desperate urgency to keep a mask on in case you offended somebody or somebody got a little bit upset. Obviously, there was no chanting. They slowly brought it back a little bit with some games that were chanting only, but again, only in specific sections. So the fact everything is now just fully relaxed, fully open, people are just enjoying the game so much more. I think it makes even more of a difference in the kind of like quite tight, pretty heavy stadiums. I mean, at Kashiwa, for example, Kashiwa's, you're very close to the pitch. It's very intense. That's the perfect stadium for, I would guess, you know, what the situation is like right now. In some of the smaller ones, I mean, we've been to games in the past that we haven't put on the channel. Some of the J3 games that are at kind of municipal sports grounds where, you know, they sometimes don't even have seats, right? J3 and JFL. You haven't really seen too much of a difference there, to be honest. But in J1, people definitely are feeling so much happier. And that's, I think, reflecting a lot more in, you know, obviously the chanting, and hopefully it's going to bring a little bit more excitement as well. So I guess as Japan starts to open up a little bit and, you know, we can have people from abroad coming to watch games again, they'll get to experience the real J-League now. So I'm excited about that too.
I'm sure you get this question on pretty much every video you post from supporters of various different clubs saying, when are you coming to watch our team? When are you coming here? Can you give any spoilers maybe on destinations you've got lined up now that Japan has opened up a bit more?
Yeah, good point. We get people all the time coming to us and saying, hey, you know, come to my team. That's, you know, J3, or come to my JFL team. And we honestly want to. That's the point of J-League Journeys, right? We want to try and rank every single team in Japan, which is going to give you the best match day. But obviously, it's a lot of time, a lot of planning, a lot of money that goes into traveling around Japan. So we have to be quite strategic about it. Luckily, there's a pretty nice holiday coming up at the end of this month. We've got Golden Week, and there's some quite tasty fixtures in Kansai. So I think we're going to be trying to get down and watch the Osaka Derby, Gamba Osaka against Cerezo. We'll probably try and see a few more games around there as well. And that's all going to be, I think, kind of May 3rd to May 8th or 9th. I think we're going to be watching games in Tower, something like that. We haven't got tickets yet, but that's the plan at least. I think we're also going to go back and see another Hiroshima game as well. We've kind of got, we've got a soft spot for Hiroshima now. So in 2 weeks, we're going to try and see Hiroshima against Yokohama FC, again, as away fans, which is something that we don't normally do. We try and sit with the home fans as much as possible. But it was so much fun this time that I think, you know, we're going to try and go back and get back into it. But yeah, that's what we've got planned for now. We definitely want to try and branch out a little bit more. I've been pushing Lolo to try and go to see Sapporo. But obviously, you know, that's a big trip, right? That's a flight and a hotel booking, right? So that's a big commitment. Normally, both myself and Lolo are a little bit last minute, and we just kind of look and see what's available on the Tuesday or the Wednesday and book in tickets for the Saturday and the Sunday, which is the worst way to do it. But we're going to try and plan some bigger trips. So I think probably Sapporo, definitely Kansai. I also want to get down to Fukuoka at some point, but that's going to be probably an end of season game, I think. But short term, at least, Kansai, I think, is the big one. Oh, sorry about that. But yeah, that's what we're looking at.
No worries. Yeah. Big plans in the works. That's terrific. And regular watchers of your channel will remember your last trip down to Kansai to watch Kobe's late, very, very late winner against Gamba. One of the most epic games. And yeah, you were literally sat there in the home end, weren't you, watching Yuya Osako put a dagger into Gamba Osaka hearts. That was quite a video. And yeah, I'm sure quite a game to be at.
We were very lucky that day as well, because a very good friend of ours who we met through J League Journeys, he reached out to us, and behind the home goal, it's kind of like free seating, but it's always blocked off for the ultras. And he's in the ultras, and he got us in there, so we got kind of the best location in the stadium for that. So we're always going to be grateful to him. It's one of our best ever J League experiences, I think. It's going to be very difficult to beat that, but yeah, big Kobe fans after that for sure. So lucky for that. And you know, we've had some other nice experiences as well. I think Urawa was a fun one, and then obviously this game at the weekend. I think personally one of the best I've been to. But then, you know, we got home and we looked at the Sapporo game, Sapporo against Kawasaki, and we, you know, realized very quickly actually we didn't go to the best game of the weekend, but we had a lot of fun. So yeah,
brilliant stuff. So you made the trek up to Kashima as we record at 10 p.m. on Monday night. I'm not sure what time you actually got home from a 3 o'clock kickoff on the Saturday up there. It's literally in the middle of nowhere, and many supporters of rival clubs bemoan that trip. It's one I've never put myself through, and I don't think I ever really intend to. I mean, the stadium itself is obviously terrific and always looks to have a good atmosphere. But yeah, it's certainly quite a jaunt, isn't it?
Honestly, it's a nightmare from all the things we've been to. It's the hardest to get to. And we went last year, and we went by bus from Tokyo Station, and that was okay. Getting home, we had to walk. We had to do about a 5K walk down the highway and then take another bus, and oh, it was a nightmare. But we're very, very lucky this time. Our good friend Kazu, who's from Hiroshima originally, but is now living in Kamakura, he offered to drive us. So if he wasn't driving, there's absolutely no way we would have gone to that game. We made a promise to ourselves last year, we're never going back unless it's in a car. So luckily, we got the lift there. We managed to get back to Tokyo by about seven or eight, I think. So probably about 8 o'clock. So not too bad. And obviously, if we weren't in the car, we wouldn't have stopped off at the 7-Eleven either. So works out pretty nicely in the end.
Yeah. absolutely. So to the events on the pitch then, Sam and Kashima have let another lead slip in this game, and yeah, after six match days they find themselves down in 13th in the table. Quite a dramatic last 20 minutes after Kei Chinen had given the hosts the lead. One of Chris and Lolo's new best friends, Douglas Vieira, turned this game on its head with a quick fire brace inside the last 5 minutes.
He absolutely did, and I'm quite jealous of the guys because it seemed to be a great day out for them. It wasn't as great watching on telly. I thought the first 70 minutes were pretty dull, and yeah, it wasn't the greatest game of football, but yeah, it did really come to life in that second half. Douglas Vieira has been out injured for large parts of his career at Hiroshima and generally doesn't do a great deal, but this was one of his great moments in a Hiroshima shirt, I thought. Especially his second goal was really well taken, and yeah, it was a fantastic end to the game, and yeah, it just seemed, yeah, terrific atmosphere, especially in that away end.
Absolutely. So, Chris, Vieira was given the opportunity to equalise in the 86th minute after a Yuta Matsumura foul in the box gave Hiroshima a penalty. So he held his nerve. And then, yes, as Sam said, his second was a terrific strike 2 minutes later. And, should we get to it? You jumped out of the car at the 7-Eleven. And I don't know, did you walk in on them, or did they walk in on you?
They walked in on us, actually. We stopped off really just to get a little bit of water and some snacks for the way home. And then all of a sudden, everybody just rushed out of the konbini. It was one of those kind of like highway service stations. And everybody just rushed out. And we were thinking, oh, no, what's happened? Has there been an accident? But then three buses were pulled up in the parking lot, and all the players were getting off. And to be honest, I didn't see anybody buy anything. I didn't see any of the players buy anything at all. I think they just came in for a chat, really. I think, to be honest, the one that enjoyed it the most was probably the translator. He was getting taking photos with everyone. He was loving every second of it. But obviously, yeah, Douglas Vieira came in very friendly. I spoke to him in English and he didn't reply to me, but he looked very happy. I'm not sure how much he understood, but he had a brilliant smile on his face. And then obviously we had a photo of Ben Khalifa as well. He spoke perfect English, lovely guy, both very friendly. And then a little bit of a chat with, obviously, the manager as well, Michael Skibber. So that was nice.
Oh, outstanding. You're right.
Yeah, we enjoyed that. Well, it was the closest we've got to J-League players, at least. And, of course, you know, there were there were Japanese players there too, players that have, you know, played in the national team. And I guess maybe a few of the travelling fans were surrounding them. But obviously, myself and Lolo, you know, we've got to go to the main man, haven't we? We've got to go to Douglas Vieira. And, yeah, he was a sweetheart. He took photos with everyone, had a moment for everybody. And he came in the konbini and did all his photos and then just walked straight out. I don't know if that's because he was sick of it or because he just wanted to come in and celebrate with the fans. I'm not sure. But, very nice gesture from them. And definitely for us has become one of our most memorable moments as well. So I think from this point onwards, I'll always, you know, have a bit of a soft spot for Hiroshima. I'll be looking out for their results because, very special, right? I think whether you're a proper fan of the team or not, you're always going to enjoy something like that. And actually, even the Kashima fans were taking pictures as well with the Hiroshima players. So, yeah, very, very special.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I didn't realize it at the time, but when I alighted at Odawara on Friday, I realized I'd been taking the same Shinkansen as the Gunma Osaka squad.
Oh, really?
And I watched their players walk down the stairs as we were going down an adjacent escalator. And I thought, well, yeah, I'm pretty big time. But yeah, there you go. And one up me by hanging out with the players at the convenience store the following day. So, yeah, that was great to see on Twitter that, yeah, you were able to get photos with them and share them. And that was that was terrific. So, well, yeah, what did you think of the two teams, Chris? Because, you do watch a lot of J-League, obviously, and Hiroshima were picked by many, myself and Sam included, as title winners this year in our J-Preds. And, you said you've got a soft spot for them now, which I perfectly understand. You've got a friend who supports them, and he's hooked you up, which is absolutely terrific. So, I don't know. Were you able to pick Michael Skibber's brain on how he thinks the season's gone so far?
Well, we only had a minute with him, really, and he basically told us how confident he is in Douglas Vieira, but he didn't talk about the future. I think he's just happy he got the win, because obviously 5 minutes from defeat there, and they didn't play badly. I don't think either of the teams played badly, to be honest, but a draw would have probably been the fairer result, I think. When obviously Douglas Vieira came on, and also Ezekiel as well, they changed the game completely, and I think obviously you're going to give San Freche a little bit more confidence moving forwards. Kashima, I think, obviously struggling. I don't think they're going to have a particularly spectacular season, but I mean, yes, I do watch a lot of J-League, but I can't predict anything here either. It's all a little bit of a mess at the moment. Lolo's happy. I mean, he obviously was, well, I don't know if we've announced this, but he also picked Hiroshima for the title as well. So he's been backing them all season. Mm-hmm. So obviously a good result there. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you think a game's going to go a particular way and it's pretty straightforward. But this season is just all over the place, isn't it? I don't think you can really predict anything. Anybody can beat anybody at the moment, except maybe Kashua Reysol. But yeah, it's a fun one. It's a good season. I'm excited to see how it develops. If Kobe can obviously stay top, if Shonan can keep pushing, if Kyoto Sanga can keep pushing, and also if Nagoya can keep their goals coming in as well to Kasper Junker. So we'll see. It's an exciting season for sure. But yeah, I'd like to see Hiroshima get a few more points and get into the top three for sure. We'll see. Fingers crossed, eh?
I've got to ask you on Kashima, because every game that we see, Yuma Suzuki seems to have something to do with the away supporters. Did he have any sort of interaction with you there? Were there hurls of abuse coming from the Hiroshima supporters at him?
There wasn't, but for the first time ever, I did see abuse between fans, and it's the first time I've ever seen something close to hooliganism in the J-League as well. I don't know if you guys are aware of it, but there's a Douglas Vieira chant that the Hiroshima fans do, where they just basically sing the word Vieira and then they make the V sign with their fingers to go for the Vieira, I guess. And that was at the Kashima fans. And it's the first time I've ever seen it. There were probably 20 to 30 fans running over to try and start a fight. And I've never seen in my life security guards look as terrified as at that moment. Obviously, nothing happened. It was all just bluster. But that's the most riled up I've ever seen fans, players, whoever, at a game. It was fun. It was close to hooliganism as I've seen in Japan, for sure. But yes, and not as bad, obviously, as it is in the Premier League or whatever. But yeah, nice little moment, I think. So we'll try and get that in the video as well, actually. I think we got that on camera. So yeah. But no, apart from that, it was a relatively timid game, I think. Kashima felt pretty relaxed. They were in control for probably the first 70 minutes, 75 minutes. And then obviously they scored their goal. They sat back and Hiroshima turned it on. But yeah, as you guys said earlier, pretty quiet game up until probably the last 20 minutes or so, wasn't it? So yeah, everyone was under control apart from the very, very small group of hooligans.
There was a picture going around on Twitter that was shared in our line group, Sam, of some Hiroshima supporters giving Yuma Suzuki a similar hand gesture to the one that he gave the Kyoto home end, I think, when Antlers won 2-0 there earlier on in the season, although theirs was a 2-1 gesture with the crossing arms, as maybe as Antlers players made their way around the pitch at the end of the match. So yeah, there was sounds like there was quite a bit of feeling on the terraces at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. And well, yeah, I mean, Suzuki knows he's going to be on the end of things like that, doesn't he? So I'm sure he wasn't particularly offended at that. But yeah, so I guess before we leave this game, Sam, how much should Daiki Iwamasa be worried about yet another meltdown late on after his side has taken the lead in a game? I know, obviously, he's one of your favourite whipping boys on this podcast, but yeah, I mean, were there on Saturday worrying signs for you, you know, with the failure to hold on to another lead?
Well, generally, I thought they played okay. They've been defensively reasonable all season. It's just that they don't seem to be able to finish off an opponent, really. They are very one-dimensional in the way that they attack. It's just generally balls into the area. It's worked on occasion. They get a couple of headers, but really, they didn't further test Hiroshima. They didn't press home that advantage, and then once you don't do that, you leave yourself susceptible to goals, and it was a bit of a poor piece of play from Matsumura. He doesn't really like to be defending, and he didn't look like he knew what he was doing there with the foul for the penalty. So it is a concern that they've conceded that goal. In terms of defences in the league, I don't think they're anywhere near the worst. We'll get on to a lot worse defending in the rest of the episode, so I don't think it's necessarily them capitulating at all. But yeah, it's just at the sharp end of the pitch. I don't think they, at the moment, are playing in a way that is going to blow teams away. They're not going to be comfortable in games, and that's going to leave them vulnerable, and that's why they're down in 13th at the moment.
Indeed, indeed. So, yeah, a good goal from Chinen, but ultimately that wasn't enough with, yes, Douglas Vieira winning it for the visitors very, very late on. All right then, Chris. So, yeah, I imagine you guys will have a video from this game dropping later on in the week. And then, as you say, around Golden Week, hopefully plenty more to come from J-League Journeys. So, yeah, once again, thanks for joining us, mate. And, yeah, feel free to give a plug to any of your socials before we let you go.
Absolutely, much appreciated. All of that, we'll get a video out soon, very well, hopefully by Friday. And of course, yeah, anybody who's interested in watching that or learning more about what we do, check us out. J-League Journeys, easy to find. And thank you once again for having me on. It's been a pleasure. And you guys will enjoy the rest of the season. Hopefully you don't get sucked up in any hooliganism either. And hopefully speak to you again soon. All right, cheers guys.
Thanks again to Chris. And that victory took Hiroshima up to fourth in the table. And next we'll move on to the three teams above them who all won on the weekend and all managed to score three goals in the process. Topping the table again after match day six are Vissel Kobe. They won their fifth game out of six so far this season in a Kansai derby away at Kyoto, who of course came in themselves on the back of three straight victories. A fairly even first half, Sam, but once Koya Yuruki broke the deadlock in favour of the visitors 10 minutes after the break, it was a pretty much one-way traffic, and the leaders ran out to deserved victors.
Yeah, they did. I'll give Kyoto credit for the first half. Defensively, I thought they were very good. They put bodies on the line. They closed down Vissel pretty well. They stopped them playing their football. Didn't offer maybe a great deal going forward themselves, but yeah, they looked solid enough, and it took a lot from Kobe in the second half to break them down. But once they did, I thought Vissel were very impressive. They controlled the game. Kyoto fell apart a little bit defensively. They were a little bit lackluster after going 1-0 down. I think their heads dropped. But yeah, Kobe's quality told in the end.
Yeah, Yuruki, of course, the reigning J-Talk player of the season for Kobe after his performances in 2022. And yes, notched a brace here on Saturday with his second coming in the 68th minute. So we're great for the Kobe supporters to see Yuruki rounding into some form. And yes, their main man up front, Yuya Osako, put the icing on the cake 10 minutes from time after some lovely work from Yoshinori Muto, who was seems to be taking a lot of joy in turning provider for his teammates this season. And he turned his man inside and out before a lovely threaded pass through to Osako, who did the rest and made it 3-0. So I guess for the time being, Sam, the Kobe have been able to put 2022 behind them, and you can hardly do much better than five victories from six to start the season. How sort of sustainable have you found this so far? Do you think they're building a genuine platform for a top four finish here from their displays in the early going?
Yeah, absolutely. But the players they've got, as long as they can keep them fit, as I said when we were previewing them, their first 11 is as good as anyone in this league. And Osako scoring goals, Muto's playing well. Yuruki, who's had a slower start to the season, but last game before the break, Izumi came in, played really well, got his goal. That seems to have spurred Yuruki on because he was magnificent in this game. I really like the balance of the midfield, especially with Saito and Yamaguchi. And unlike any Kobe team I can really remember, they've been defensively solid, which is crazy to think with three of their maybe first preferred backline out and Maikau not the greatest goalkeeper in the world. But yeah, they've been really, really solid. Only conceded two goals, which is magnificent. So yeah, it could be sustainable. This is Kobe we're speaking of, so I don't know exactly if they're going to be consistent all season, but yeah, they've done nothing wrong so far at the start of this year. They've been absolutely magnificent.
All right, and before we leave this game, then you praised Kyoto for their defensive effort in the first half, and I guess we were worried about their lack of goals at the start of the season in our season previews. As we said, they'd won three on the spin. Was this just a day where they didn't have their shooting boots on? I mean, Kinoshita had impressed since coming into the team and looked to had built had built up quite a promising link up with Patrick, but that just didn't quite fire for them on Saturday.
Yeah, they didn't really have many chances to even use their shooting boots, to be honest. Kobe kept them at arm's length. I thought defensively they were really solid. I mean, Yamakawa, who's been mainly a right back, he's played centre back all season, and to deal with the likes of Patrick and Kinoshita, especially aerially, I thought he did it magnificently well. And he, I mean, Yuki Honda, I thought, was a ridiculous signing when he first joined, but he's been solid as well. So you've got to give a lot of credit, I think, to the Kobe defence. They didn't give Kyoto a sniff. So, yeah, maybe they had their shooting boots on, but they just didn't get to use them.
Now, fair enough then. Okay, so Kyoto slipping slightly in the table down to seventh, but yes, they still have 9 points on the board after six match days. Sam mentioned that Kobe have conceded just twice this season, and they're the second highest scorers in J1 behind, can you believe it, Shaunan Belmari, who we're going to come on to later. But yes, if you had placed a bet on Shaunan to be the top scorers in the league after six match days, yes, you would be cashing at very long odds, I'm sure. So yeah, Kobe, the joint best defense now in J1 after this clean sheet with Nagoya. And yeah, we had a bit of a collector's item away at the Big Swan Stadium on Saturday, a Nagoya goal conceded, and it saw hosts Albert X Niigata take the lead in the 35th minute with one of the signings of the season so far. Shusuke Ota getting yet another goal, tapping in after Mitch Langerak had made a low save. But yeah, Ota got to the loose ball first and scored to put the hosts ahead. But well, yes, the joy was very, very short-lived, to say a massive understatement, Sam, as literally seconds after the restart, Niigata were down to 10 men, and well, the rest of the game from there was pretty much a procession for Nagoya.
Yeah, this was devastating for them because they'd been the better side. I thought the first half an hour they deserved their lead. They maybe could have had a second as well, or to had another chance that Langerak was able to save pretty comfortably. But yeah, to go 1-0 up and then immediately, like, literally on the TV, it was as soon as the replay was done, Michael James Fitzgerald was launching himself into a challenge. Only got a yellow card on the field, but it's absolutely correct on review. It's studs up, they're just above the ankle. It's a really poor tackle and he deserved to go. And yeah, that changed the way that the game was playing because Nagoya were then forced to have possession. And they don't really like it for whatever reason, but they should have possession. They've got enough players going forward. And once they dominated the ball, they were always going to break them down with Nagai and Junker and Mateus. And it took a little while to eventually get the winner and then the third. But yeah, they were firmly in control from then on. But yeah, it was just a real shame because the game was a pretty decent one. But yeah, that red card completely took Niigata out of it.
Yeah, such a shame. And Niigata have won so many admirers in the first month or 6 weeks of the season so far. And yes, taking the lead at such a defensive against such a defensive powerhouse as Nagoya. But yeah, as you say, Sam, to then have that yeah, that joy be so short-lived. And yes, Michael Fitzgerald seeing red seconds after. And yeah, Nagoya were able to make their pressure count, equalizing 11 minutes after the break through Kensuke Nagai. Then with 10 minutes to go, Nagai's strike partner Kasper Junker leapt to volley in with his left foot. And Sho Inagaki finished things off in the second half stoppage time with a trademark late run into the box. And yeah, a very composed finish to make it 3-1. So yeah, Nagoya and like Kobe have risen so many spots up the table in the early going from where they finished in 2022. We know their defense is legit, Sam, and that's always going to keep them in games. And yeah, we've seen examples so far this season of the potential potency of Nagai and Junker. And yeah, Mateus, who usually pulls all the strings and makes everything tick, he's still yet to get a goal himself. But yeah, I'm sure that's coming sooner rather than later. And yeah, I guess Nagoya are proving that they're legit so far this season, aren't they?
Yeah, they absolutely are. And it's the defence that is the key standout, really. And you've seen that with Kobe and Nagoya. And even if you look at the top five at the moment, all of them are really settled defences. They're really good defensively. We'll get on to Reds, who have improved as the season has gone on so far. And that's the difference between a lot of these teams and the rest of the league, because you don't, with these top five, at least these top, at least two, especially Kobe and Nagoya, you don't expect at the moment them to make mistakes. Sure, certainly not Nagoya, but there's no real horror errors coming in that defence or with the goalkeeper that we see with every other team in the, like from six downwards this league. So I think that's going to really prove vital for them going forward, and they've got the firepower going forward to win them games. It might not always be pretty, but I think that's going to keep them right up there for a battle for the top four and maybe even the title.
Indeed. So, yeah, Niigata have just taken on Nagoya at home. Of course, the team are second in the table. Their next test is a trip to the leaders, Kobe, this coming Sunday. So, obviously, every game in J1 is fascinating and any result is possible, Sam. We know that. But, I guess Niigata have the players that could test this kind of makeshift, in inverted commas, Kobe backline that has proven quite rigid so far. But, it'll be really interesting to see, how the likes of Ryotaro Ito and, indeed, Shusuke Ota, who's scoring for fun these days, fare against the league leaders on their own patch.
Absolutely. I thought Ito had another decent game, especially while Niigata were level in terms of players on the field. He set up an auto chance and before he scored, and Auto also has looked really good. Mito is coming back from an injury, but he should be fit to start. Same with Takahiro Ko. I think they've missed in the last couple of games, but he's back. But just looking defensively now, with Michael Fitzgerald is going to be suspended, Chiba's been injured, they've got Kojima missed this game through injury, and I don't think they can really afford anyone to miss out from that back line, because suddenly it gets fairly weak, and against Osako and Muto and Yuruki, you do kind of fear for Niigata, but they will play their own way. They will try and go toe-to-toe with Kobe, so it should prove to be a fascinating game.
Absolutely. Yeah, one to look forward to. And I don't know, maybe I'm stealing your thunder there. That might be your one to watch, Sam. We'll find out at the end of the episode. Okay, so also scoring three goals over the weekend. And yes, rising to third in the table are Urawa Reds. They won for the fourth straight game after winning Friday night football away at Kashiwa Reysol. Yes, the Hitachi Dai Stadium was the scene. And yes, unfortunately for the home support, Reysol are still looking for a first victory of the season. Urawa veteran striker Shinzo Kuroki put them ahead with a close range finish from the edge of the 6-yard box a minute before the break. Then Alex Schalk made it to 2-0 15 minutes from time before Schalk set up Takahiro Akimoto for an acrobatic volley from his cross 8 minutes from time. So I guess along similar lines, although maybe to the Kyoto Kobe game, Sam, Kashiwa had their chances early, but once Reds took the lead, they were really able to assert themselves throughout the second half.
Yeah, bar like Koizumi at the post in the side of the first minute, but other than that, Kashiwa were the better team in the first 20-25 minutes or so. They got forward pretty well. Koyamatsu was heavily involved. He had a couple of chances. Mateus Savio likewise. And they were kind of using J-Roy Grott up front. It's kind of a direct approach, but he was pretty decent, especially in the Levan Cup tie. He got two goals there. And he was causing a few problems up front to start this game. And they got around him pretty well, but didn't quite take their chances. They didn't really necessarily create the absolute clear-cut chance. And then after that, Reds kind of took on. They got their goal right before halftime, which is obviously like the best time to score, as they say, as the old cliche goes. And then second half, Reds were fantastic. They absolutely controlled the game. I thought Ito in midfield, as usual, was fantastic. He ran the show. Defensively, they were solid. I really like the partnership of Schultz and Heubraten. And then they got forward in numbers. They got forward with good movement, which was lacking at the start of the season. Akimoto and Sakai from fullback, really heavily involved. I thought Okubo was magnificent. His movement, his runs, it caused so many problems, and they fully deserved their goals. I thought Kashua defended better than they have done. They've gone with Tanaka and Tsuchiya alongside Koga. Tsuchiya made a couple of really good interceptions, so it's a shame that it was him trying to intercept the through pass that leads to Schalke's goal. That was it, because he'd performed really well before then. But then it was, yeah, a fine finish from Schalke the first time, considering he's had very little football. And then the third goal is a thing of absolute beauty. Kaito Yasui off the bench, I think he'd been really impressive so far this season. It's a fantastic run from him, combined with Okubo onto Schalke, and the cross, perfect for Akimoto, a wonderful volley. And yeah, it's one of the best goals of the weekend. It was a magnificent from Reds, and they are really coming into their own now. It was a slow start, but yeah, Maciej Gorsha has really got them playing pretty nicely. Obviously, Reds will have fairly nice opponents to play against. They will give you space, but second half, Reds took full advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You can only beat what's put in front of you. And yeah, after those early chances for Racehole, as we said, Reds really stamped their authority on things and, yeah, scored some terrific goals. Certainly take your point on Tsuchiya. He was very unfortunate. He just couldn't quite sort his feet out, could he, when he was trying to cut out that through ball and ended up, yeah, setting it up on a plate for Schalke, who, dispatched a terrific finish for his first league goal for Reds. And that'll be a huge weight off his shoulders after his fitness concerns since he joined the club. And echo your thoughts on Akimoto's volley. I mean, yeah, he could be playing anywhere, couldn't he? But for now, Scorgia's carried on with him at left back, but capable of playing anywhere and scoring terrific goals that he did on Friday night to, as we said, wrap things up for Reds. And yes, they are looking the real deal, as you say, Sam. After a very slow start, two straight losses, they've rebounded and seem to be getting better on a week by week basis. So fair play to Reds and well done for Racehole supporters still looking for their first victory of the season. The signs haven't been great through 6 weeks, but they'll keep on plugging away, I'm sure. Okay, well, we did mention it at the start of the episode that Manny Padovan would be joining us. So after a quick hit of music, we'll throw in our chat with Manny on the only draw from the Match Day 6 slate. Our next guest is our new Yokohama FC correspondent. It's a big welcome back to the pod to Manny Padovan. Manny, how are you?
Hi. I'm good. Thank you. Doing well.
Good to hear, mate. I guess, you would have been wishing that your team was doing a little bit better on the pitch in J1, six rounds in to your return to the top flight. Are still looking for a first victory of the campaign after another home game in the return from the international break against Fukuoka. How are you feeling about that result? A 1-1 draw against, a Fukuoka team who were flying high in the table.
Well, if you can't win, don't lose, right? It was a really weird game. I don't think it was a great game of football on both sides, but I thought there was lots of sort of positives to take from that for us. Hayashi was good. And I thought Ichikawa had a really sort of solid, confident sort of game. He usually starts pretty well, but then sort of in the second half, he can sort of forget he's in the game of football and make some mistakes. But this game, he was really, really, really strong. And I think it was, I don't want to sort of moan about the referee because it's a bit cliche, but I thought the referee was terrible. And, you know, some of the decisions, especially the first penalty kick, was just, I didn't really see it in a stadium. It was very quick and I just saw him on the floor. And then in highlights, it just looked even worse. And it was just, I think that just really hindered us. But then we came back in the second half and we had some good period of football, but we just couldn't quite sort of get the ball in the net. Just before the second half, we got a nice penalty kick in like the 8th minute of the extra time, which was quite satisfying. But I think the referee, he didn't let the game flow and it was quite stuttering, and it wasn't great.
Yes, it was a penalty apiece in the first half. Yuya Yamagishi in the 16th minute for visiting Fukuoka. And then, yes, Yokohama FC's main man, Koki Ogawa, getting Yokohama FC back on level terms, as Manny said, in the 9th minute of first half stoppage time. And, without Ogawa, Manny, I wonder where you'd be. You certainly would be struggling in the goal count. There's no doubt about that. That was Ogawa's fifth of the season already in the league, and he's. It's been great after Sam and I were a little bit critical of him, of his finishing in the opening day clash against Nagoya. Since then, he's certainly taken to life back in J1 and proven that, last year's golden boot in J2 was no fluke. He's been excellent.
Yeah, no, Ogawa's been really, really good. And like you said, I'm not sure where we'd be without him, to be honest, because he's scored, I think, aside from the own goals, he's scored, I think, the majority of our goals this season so far, or all of them, I think. So I think we'd be really lost without him. We're just not making the most of him, I feel. We tend to just sort of, put the ball in from the side and hope he gets it, or he's sort of left isolated up front with no service. So we just need to find a way to sort of get him utilised a bit more.
Yeah, you brought in Caprini in this game. He started in the last Levan Cup game, and he's been decent off the bench. Don't know why he hasn't started more, but I thought there was a little bit of link-up play with him and Ogawa. It was a little bit different than going and crossing in throughout. And then I thought, just to generally, that Levan Cup game during the international break, you only lost 1-0 to Kobe after they brought on the cavalry of Osako, Muto and Iniesta. So have you seen the cup, like, that game? And, like, maybe you've kept in Hayashi, you've kept in Yoshino. Do you think the performances in that time have really helped improve the squad a little bit? I know it's not like it's only a 1-1 draw at home to Avispa, but there seem to be certain signs of improvement, especially defensively, compared to that performance against Kyoto.
Yeah, definitely. The performance against Kyoto was an unmitigated disaster, really. I don't know what happened. And then the Levan Cup, the cup doesn't really mean a great deal to us at the moment. But for that performance, it was really, really good, and I think it sort of helped to sort of give the squad some confidence in a way. It was good to see Caprini get his first start in the league, because I think he's been performing quite well, and he scored a goal. I think it was against Hiroshima in the cup again. In the game against Fukuoka, his crosses were a bit all over the place, but I really rate him because he tries to get a shot away, or he tries to sort of do something positive. So I think that cup game against Kobe was really positive for us, and I would have been happy with a 0-0 draw for that. And it was only, like you said, Iniesta coming off that sort of really changed it. But then even again in that game, we just didn't take our chances. And it's kind of this situation here again that we're not able to take our chances.
Yeah, I think you appear to be a glass half full Yokohama FC supporter, Manny. So, a pessimist would look at the second from bottom without a win after six games and be really concerned about how things are going. And obviously in a number of games, you've shipped a number of goals. And I mean, one of your players has scored the best own goal of all time. But to be fair, you did come back and equalize in that game away at Shonan. So, there have been positives, haven't there? And Sam and I have tried to pick them out on a week-by-week basis. I mean, there have been signs there, but your team hasn't been able to put a consistent, consistent 90 minutes together where you're able to, stitch those good passages of play together and you know, ultimately come out with a victory. So whether it'll be this Saturday night in the cauldron of the Nissan Stadium in the Yokohama Derby, we don't know. I'm sure you would there would be no sweeter feeling than obviously winning a derby away at F Marinos. But in general, how are you feeling about things and how close is a first victory, do you feel?
Well, I was talking to John from J Talk Extra, and he said that statistically, we're gonna have to get a win at some point. So that hope I'm sticking to. Whether it'll come in the derby, I'm not sure. I mean, realistically, no one's expecting us to win, or win the derby. So in a way, it's almost a free hit for us, and I just want us to sort of go out there and sort of be a bit more positive. And say with a cup game on Wednesday, start some players that haven't played yet, give them some play time, because it's not, the cup game isn't important for us, it's the league. So yeah, I hope on the evening kickoff on Saturday that we can just go out there with a bit of chutzpah and sort of give it to them a bit, because realistically we're definitely the underdogs and no one's expecting us to win. So I think that works in our benefit.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. So, Sam, we obviously have a number of Fukuoka supporters who listen to this podcast, and their side are now 5 unbeaten after this draw away at Yokohama FC. How would Avispa supporters have felt at full time? Disappointed not to have won away at the side second from bottom, or did they battle out a fairly even game, as Manny suggested, and was the draw a fair result at the end of the day?
I think it was fairly fair. I think both sets of supporters will probably come away with it thinking we should have won that game. There was maybe chances for both teams. Avispa, as usual, a lot when they don't go for it enough. I think this is a game where generally most teams in the league going against Yokohama FC would go out for that victory at 1-1. And the Avispa don't throw enough players forward. They didn't create too much, enough chances to really break Yokohama FC down in the way that, look at the way Kyoto played. They went after them. They got their goals. And the Avispa just don't have that in them. They only seem to have it when they're forced into it, like we saw against Shonan prior to the international break. So I think generally supporters will be disappointed maybe with the way that Avispa approach games, but Avispa and their manager are pretty content with the way that they play. They don't lose too many. They've got themselves in fifth, and they'll point to that as being successful, but I still want to see a bit more from them. But yeah, it was a generally even game. I thought both penalties were soft. The first one is the softest of them. I mean, there's barely any contact with Lukian, and it goes to a review. It's still given. It's a poor decision. And then I think he sort of evens it up. It's more of a foul from Lukian on Mita, but still not a great deal in it. So, yeah, evened up for 1-1 there. And second half, yeah, it was a decent enough game, but I don't think either team necessarily did enough to win it.
No, fair enough. So it was Lukian giveth and Lukian taketh away, or something like that for Fukuoka. Yes, he won the penalty to put them ahead, and then conceded the penalty that saw Yokohama FC, as we said, equalise just before half time. So, Manny, what did you think of Fukuoka as an opponent then? We do know that they are, difficult to break down, and resolute is a good word to describe them, I think. So, I guess going in, probably a team you expected would be around your area of the table at the start of the season, and they find themselves up in the top six, as you said, after an unbeaten run. But, what did you make of them overall?
Yeah, not particularly great. I wasn't sort of, I've seen the teams like Nagoya, I thought was sort of good, and we did well against them. Kashima was really good, but they were I just thought they were generally weren't great, and I think that's what's the frustrating part is. I thought we should have done better instead of taking advantage of that. Even in the first half they were going down for sort of cramp and other issues, in the first half, so it was. That was a sign for things to come, I think, and it just, it did instill a lot of love from the Yokohama fans, that's for sure.
No, fair enough then. All right then. So yeah, it's a huge one on Saturday night away at F Marinos. Yeah, I'm sure one that all Yokohama FC supporters had circled on their calendar when the fixtures were released. And it's just something we spoke about when we had you on at the before the season started, Manny, with the maybe the missteps that the club took in terms of their active support. The crowds for the last couple of home games have been really poor, haven't they? After you were over 10,000 for the first two home games, back to back home games either side of the international break, and just over 3,400. Saw your take on Kyoto, and it was under 5,000 to see the Fukuoka game. So, I mean, the quality, in inverted commas, or the drawing power of the opponent plays a role in that, I guess. But, it's quite worryingly low numbers, aren't they? Especially as Saturday dawned bright and sunny. Quite a disappointing crowd number, wasn't it?
Yeah, with the Kyoto game, it was sort of understandable because the weather was horrendous and there's sort of no cover whatsoever. But for the Saturday game, it was perfect weather, and it is disappointing. I think that's a lot partly to do with the football, you know, that we're second from bottom, or at the time we were sort of rock bottom. We compete against sort of bigger clubs, and the way the club has handled the sort of supporters group hasn't been great. A lot of times the away fans have more flags, more banners, and we have we've got maybe about four flags and no banners. It turns out the club has agreed to some banners from the supporters groups, but the supporters group has essentially said, well, if we can't have them all, we're not going to take any in. So that's been a bit disappointing, but hopefully if we pick up some results and we sort of get going, then perhaps the numbers will increase. But yeah, it's not looking great.
Go back to the ref, back to the game, and back to the referee that you mentioned quite early on, and some Avista supporters might accuse you of bias maybe in your answer to this, but a high boot comes in on Koki Ogawa. Clear penalty for you? It definitely was for me.
I was literally right behind the goal and I saw it, and his foot was at a natural level. And it was just plain as day. And I don't understand why, what's the point of VAR? Going back to the first penalty, the decision took forever. And at one point, it was looking like it was being given as a goal kick. And then it was taken back as a penalty. And if you have to decide for that long, it shouldn't be a penalty then. And whereas this one, completely not picked up. We're not playing great, and we haven't done well this season so far. But in games like this, it's frustrating when we're sort of kneecapped by sort of poor officiating, really. It's just, unfortunate.
Indeed. And I think I've got to ask you this, Manny. We haven't spoken to you for a while, obviously, and I don't want to sound like I'm sinking the boot in, but... Yeah, Shonan away, 23rd minute, Taki Iwata has the ball at in his left-back position. And, as most people listen to this podcast have seen, and thousands of people seen around the world, scores the most audacious own goal of all time. I'm sure it hasn't left your memory in the 5 or 6 weeks since it happened. So I don't know. Can you comprehend it at this point? Have you been able to wrap your head around it?
I mean, to be honest, it is terrible. It's also fantastic in a way, but we've also had a load of other own goals. I don't know if I've ever seen a team have as many own goals as we had in such a short space of time. So that was seemed to start like the sort of waterworks of our own goal sort of spree. And it's just, it's unfortunate. And I do feel sorry for Ward. I think, I don't know what he was doing. I think it was sort of a pass, because it comes from sort of this need to sort of play out from the back, sort of a la Manchester City. And it's just, it's not working. But admittedly, though, he seems to be stopped doing that now. And we've sort of moving on to something a bit more sort of direct. But yeah, I think it was just stems from that sort of ordered sort of pass around, and it was just, oh, it was just terrible. I still have flashbacks.
Yeah. Well, after 3 weeks out injured with embarrassment, Wada was able to make his return before the international break and, came off the bench on Saturday against Fukuoka. So, still looking for your first victory, Manny. But, there have been positive signs here and there. So, who knows? It might be Saturday night at the Nissan Stadium. That might be there could be hardly a better occasion to notch your first victory of the season. But, just wanted to take the pulse of Yokohama FC supporters. 6 games into the new campaign, so thanks for joining us again. We look forward to catching up with you sporadically throughout the season.
Okay, thank you very much. Pleasure to talk the Wolves of Yokohama.
All right, thanks again to Manny. And breaking the episode up a bit there with the only draw of the match day, because there is plenty of chaos energy to come, listeners, in the remaining 4 games. Don't you worry about that. For the next game, we'll head up to the Sapporo Dome, and it was the Saturday night event of the round, and it turned into an absolute humdinger, Sam. One of the matches of the season for good reasons and for bad. So much to talk about from this absolute cracker up at the Dome. It finished Sapporo 3, Kawasaki 4, and the visitors Frontale turned up in desperate need of a victory. A couple of occasions in the first half when they fell behind, it looked like they weren't going to get it, but Sapporo ended up being very accommodating hosts in an absolute classic.
It was a classic. It was not necessarily always for the right reasons. I just say Sapporo will be furious with themselves the way that they've conceded goals here, because they scored 3 pretty good goals themselves in terms of the quality of them. I thought Kaneko's run and cross for Okamura to give them the lead for 1-0 was a terrific piece of play. But at the back, defensively and in goal, just dreadful. The first one, Sugano had such a good performance in that first game, and unfortunately he's been injured since. But you thought with Gu coming in, you've got a really solid pair of hands. He was very, very good last time he was in Sapporo. He played pretty well in Korea. But I don't know who this imposter is that has turned up to play here. The ball's launched forward from Jung. It goes all the way through to Gu, who literally, he has it in the palm of his hand. And for whatever reason, just flicks it up very nicely for Miyashiro, who can't believe he has looked for the diving header. Dreadful piece of goalkeeping, and then they looked like they got back in front. A terrific cross from Aoki and Asano with the header, but then they just throw it away again. My mate Fukumori, who I really like, but is not a defender really. They played him in midfield for this game, which was better. I think he's better in that quarterback role, but he was forced to try and defend here. Did not. He just brushed off so easily by Yamada. It's dreadful defending, really. And then a tap-in for Yamane, and we weren't done there. I mean, Baba, who came on, I think Kobayashi got injured. Baba came on, robbed in possession on halfway. Gu is like miles out of his goal for no real reason. Ianaga takes it. It's a gorgeous finish from 45 yards for a 3-2 at the end of the first half. A fantastic, ridiculous, crazy first half. But yeah, it was just chaos energy, J-League at its finest.
Yeah, I mean, that game obviously had enough action and talking points and, just carnage, frankly, for a full game or a couple of games worth of talking points. But, when the players and the supporters and everybody watching at home dusted themselves down, Frontale, after trailing twice in the first half, went into the sheds 3-2 up, as Sam said, after Ianaga scored in first half stoppage time with a long-range chip over Gu, who was in the middle of nowhere. In a seesaw battle, in an absolute humdinger, Sapporo were able to claw themselves off the floor and equalise just before the hour through Kim Gun-hee. But in the typical Sapporo fashion, you knew that wasn't going to be the last hurrah from either team for good reason or for bad. And it was the Kawasaki sub Yusuke Sagawa, who I think I've mentioned him a couple of times this season. He hasn't been particularly good since joining the club, and I wonder whether he's really at this level. Well, he certainly put me in my place with a goal 4 minutes from time to win it. So I don't know. It's difficult to talk about who deserved to win a game like this, I suppose, Sam. But for Frontale, after their struggles early in the season, and I suggested they might even be the underdog in this fixture in last week's episode, it was a precious 3 points. And that's got to obviously do a lot for the morale of their squad.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how to describe it necessarily, but maybe it was a game that Sapporo deserved to lose. I'll put it like that, rather than Kawasaki necessarily doing anything great to win it. But they pressed forward. It was not great defending from Sapporo, who got kind of spooked because Leandro Damian, which is great, came back, and they put in a lot of crosses that Sapporo really didn't deal with. And then it came to one of the smallest players on the pitch, Yusuke Sagawa, who headed in. I don't know if he's turned into your new Kota Mizunuma, because the poor boy can't get a break from him, from you. So, but I think he did well here. It was a good header. And maybe just about deserved. I don't know if they'll necessarily take full confidence from this, because Sapporo were a very hospitable host. But to get a late victory, as Kawasaki have struggled so much this season. So hopefully for them, it could be a real boost that they need. They've still got a few more injuries that have come out of the game. Marcinho missed it through injury. I think he's out for about 2 months. Kobayashi went off. Well, he got an injury in this game as well. So it's not all plain sailing for Frontale. But they'll be absolutely delighted to get the victory and come away from this. But Sapporo, I mean, compare this team to the team that played against Marinos and were defensively resolute and completely controlled the game. It's just incredible that it's the same set of players. And I know Jay Bothroyd, everyone's favourite on Twitter, has been furious with the way that they've defended. He launched another attack on Misha Petrovic's lack of defensive nous, I think, at the weekend. So, really, it's just frustrating for Sapporo. And they're great to watch. They're fantastic. But they keep sliding closer towards relegation. And I don't think they will again this season. I think they've got enough going forward. But I just really wish they'd sort of sort themselves out defence. At least try it. At least think about changing something.
Yeah, they do leave us scratching their heads, on so many occasions. But yes, they do provide some outstanding entertainment at the same time. So you've got to take the good with the bad. But their supporters obviously just must be tearing their hair out, because they know what their team is capable of. But there's just zero consistency from them on a week to week basis. But one of the better games of the season in terms of a spectacle so far, I think. And the win saw Kawasaki now join a ruck of five teams on 8 points after six games, with the two wins, two draws, and two losses. And the next two games we're going to chat about, in fact, the teams that won also won for the second time this season to move on to 8 points. And the next two games both involve the Osaka clubs. And next we'll head to the Lemon Gas Stadium, where Shonan hosted Gamba Osaka. And I mentioned with Chris back in part one, I got off the same Shinkansen as the Gamba squad on Friday afternoon. And one of the last players down the stairs was Kosei Tani, who were, of course, making an emotional return to Kanagawa. The Gamba players would have gotten out of Odawara Station and onto a bus, presumably headed in the Hiratsuka direction, an area obviously that Tani knows very well after spending the last 3 years on loan at Shonan. And as I saw him walk off into the distance, I did wonder if Tani would be recalled by Danny Poyatos to between the sticks for Gamba. And it turns out that Poyatos does have a sentimental string to his bow, Sam, but I bet he wishes he'd stuck with Masaaki Higashiguchi after the way Tani gave Shuto Machino the first of his four goals in the first half on Saturday afternoon in the 21st minute?
Well, I hope he's not picking teams based on sentimentality. I hope there's something thought that goes into it, because I don't know why he was dropped in the first place. And I'm not saying this has directly contributed to this performance, but it must have been a blow to the confidence to have not really done anything wrong and been dropped. And then Higashiguchi got away with an error and continued in. But yeah, Tani was back, and he probably forgot that he was it moved to Gamba and he wasn't still at Shonan, because unfortunately this was an absolutely horrid display. Like, Gamba had started fairly well. They were maybe the better team. They had a couple of decent chances, but then it's just one long ball. Tani is out to it, kind of misjudges it. It bounces a bit behind him. He tries to hook it clear, slice it straight to Shuto Machino, 1-0, very easy. And it was the start of an absolute horror display from Gamba Osaka in that first half. But a game that Shuto Machino will absolutely remember. It goes down in the record books with 4 first half goals. And yeah, he didn't celebrate many of them, or any of them really. And it's because Gamba absolutely handed at least 3 of them on a plate to him.
Yeah, it was absolutely stunning. As you say, yeah, Gamba started brightly, and Yuki Yamamoto hit the post in the 13th minute. And, I mean, the Gamba players and the supporters behind the, in the away end, obviously had no idea of what was to transpire before halftime. But, Tani, basically, as we said, just sliced his attempted clearance after charging out of the box. Machino had the simplest of tap-ins once the ball came down out of the sky. Interestingly enough, Sam, the long ball forward from the Shonan keeper was from Daiki Tommy and not from Song Boom Kyun, the Shonan manager. Satoshi Yamaguchi also made a change in goal that took me by surprise. Obviously, Song was very much a heralded signing in the off-season. Were you surprised to see that that change made as well? Or perhaps, I don't know, maybe Song was away with the South Korean national team and maybe not fit to start? Or that certainly took me by surprise that he wasn't playing.
Yeah, it definitely surprised me. He was away, but it was only in Korea. It's not like the greatest journey away. It's nothing different than Sapporo down to Fukuoka or something like that.
Right, right.
Less than that. So, and he didn't play in any of the games either. So maybe he had a really rough flight and he didn't feel up to it or whatever, but it didn't make much sense to me. But so yeah, strange one, because Song has been fantastic. I'm pretty sure he'll come back in, but maybe just a bit conservative about some sort of travel or whatnot. Or maybe he wasn't there for certain training sessions when they were working on something. Whatever logic it is, it didn't really make a great deal of sense to me. But yeah, Tommy played fairly well, so it didn't cost them. But I fully expect Song to return for the next league game.
Yeah, rightio then. So, Machino took advantage of that horror show from Tani in the 21st minute to give Shonan the lead. And then a remarkable purple patch of 3 goals in 4 minutes from the 38th minute onwards saw, as we said, Machino score 4 times in the first half. And, Gamba were the architects of their own downfall, a stunning burst. And, I mean, there was good fortune and, horrible defending around most of them, Sam. So, I guess Machino kind of would have felt embarrassed to do his normal carry-on celebrations in scoring all of these goals. But, I don't think it was something we necessarily could see coming from Gamba, but it just everything that could have gone wrong in a 5-minute spell did, and Machino certainly made them pay. There's no question about that.
Yeah, he absolutely did. You know, there are errors in these goals, but you've got to give a lot of credit to Machino. I mean, the first one's not a massive finish, but the second one, he has to react to it. It's like, how can you expect Gamba to one defender to clear it to another defender who clears it off the holding midfielder and then the ball to drop to you? Can't expect that, but he reacts really well. It's a great first time finish into the back of the net for 2-0. And then, great composure for the third one. It's a deep free kick. Tani completely flaps it. He gets nowhere near it. And then ball comes to Machino, just by the 6-yard box on that side of the goal. And then for whatever reason, Gamba just remain in their formation. Nobody goes out to challenge him. Nobody thinks I might need to cover my goalkeeper who's completely out of position. They just stand there. It's a good finish there, but they made it as easy as possible to score from that angle. Absolutely rubbish defending from Gamba. But took his chance there. Hat-trick for match, you know, and then the fourth goal is it's a bit better. It's still a little bit scrappy in the way it comes about, and then he can't celebrate immediately because he's given offside. But correct slide ball through from Nakano from the left side. Machino, it's a good finish. It's correctly given on review for 4-0, so it'll go down in the record books. He doesn't care necessarily how they've come about, but Gamba have got to be so furious with themselves, especially with those opening three goals. It was just absolutely rubbish.
Yeah, it certainly was. But you and I were both happy to get all of those fantasy points from Machino's four goals. And what somebody was trying to invent a special term for what a four goal should be. It's one more than a hat trick. So what did they come up with? And I don't think it's going to catch on, is it?
No, the J-League International YouTube called it a quattrick, which is absolutely dreadful. I hate it. It's a rubbish term. I thought, okay, is this really what the Japanese use to describe a four-goal haul? But no, it's just someone's just having a strange license, and I don't think they'll be kept on for their title-writing abilities. Let's just put that away, shall we?
Yes, he scored four goals. I think we'll leave it at that. A hat trick plus one I think a bit easier to understand. All right. Well, so I saw the Gamba squad get off the Shinkansen. I saw Issam Jabali, sauntering down the stairs. So I knew that he was a very good chance to make the return to the Gamba match day squad after a couple of weeks out through injury. And indeed he did. And came off the bench before the end of the first half, replacing Musashi Suzuki. And just past the hour, Issam Jabali gave Gamba, some sort of a foothold. He got them a consolation goal, I suppose. And to be fair, Gamba did have the better of the chances in the remainder of the game. And indeed, Jabali had a chance to make it two in the 90th minute from the penalty spot, but unfortunately skied his penalty over the bar. And it finished 4-1. And Machino's, first half assault on the Gamba defence was more than enough for Shonan to notch their second victory of the season, as we said, and move on to 8 points. Also doing the same were Cerezo Osaka. So the other half of Osaka had a much better Saturday than Gamba did. And it was Leo Ciara returning to haunt Yokohama F. Marinos, Sam. According to the official J-League statistics, Ciara has notched a brace on Saturday in Cerezo's 2-1 win over Yokohama F. Marinos. But again, it just comes back to the fact that the J-League has no idea what an own goal is, as Ciara's 16th minute header was basically heading for the corner flag before the unfortunate F. Marinos defender Eduardo kneed it into his own net. So, elsewhere around the world, that is an Eduardo own goal, but the J-League has given it to Ciara. And I'm just going to keep mentioning these until somebody listens and somebody changes their policy, because it's just ridiculous.
Well, they need to figure something out. Even if you don't call it an own goal, call it something else, because I guess they don't want to offend someone by saying he scored an own goal, and maybe Eduardo would be really upset by it if it went down as that. But just give it something, because to give it as a Leo Ciara goal when it's, I just say, going out for a to the corner flag, it's just ridiculous. It makes the league look a little bit tin pot, in my opinion. So, ridiculous. There's no way Leo Ciara is claiming that. There's no way I'm going to note that down as a Leo Ciara goal, because it's just nowhere near. But he played well, though, to be fair to him. He was up for it. You could tell against F. Marinos. I think he has every right to be a little bit annoyed that they didn't keep him on there. I think he certainly considering they've replaced him with Kenyu Sugimoto, I think he's got to be quite furious. But I don't think I've ranted on that on this podcast. I don't think I'm going to one goal in 40 games for the league, going to the league champions, just whatever. Do whatever you want, Marinos. But they missed Ciara, and he looked really good in this game. Obviously got the eventual goal that actually counted. And Cerezo looked pretty decent. But I think Marinos supporters probably went to Cerezo pretty realising they weren't going to win, because they haven't won away at Cerezo since 2011, which is an incredible record there. And Cerezo looked like a team that were always going to win this game. They were comfortable even when F. Marinos got back into it. So really professional performance from them. They've not always been at it, Cerezo, but this was really good. And Leo Ciara getting into form is exactly what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. Great for him to score against his former club. Certainly had a point to prove, I'm sure, to Kevin Muscat and maybe his former teammates as well. But so that's a 3 unbeaten for Cerezo now, and they've moved themselves onto 8 points. Ciara's goal, well, according to the J League, his second, but in reality, yes, his first in the 35th minute was one of Sam's favourite types of goal, a diving header from a close range Hiroaki Okuno cross. And then, I guess F. Marino supporters thought they were in with a chance of nicking a point inside the last 10 minutes when the unfortunate Hinata Kida bundled into his own net for an own goal 7 minutes from time. But F. Marino's unable to bang the door down. And Cerezo's second victory of the season saw them move on to 8 points. And I guess the defending champions in sixth spot after 6 rounds, certainly no cause for panic, but some of their recent performances haven't been particularly noteworthy, and they'll hope to get back to winning ways against Manny's Yokohama FC in the Yokohama Derby on Saturday night. All right, then. So one more game to cover from J1 Match Day 6. And I guess some things we can just take for granted, Sam. The sky is blue. Water is wet. FC Tokyo lose at Tosu.
Oh, absolutely. And something came over Jakub Slovic right at the end to make sure that happened. I don't know what was going on in his mind, because it was such a dross game going forward. Well, just in general for that game, the 95th minute, I don't know why, but he takes a goal kick, just passes it to Kawata, gives him the greatest debut he can have. It's a very modest shot. It goes straight to Slovic, and he's one of the best shot stoppers in the league, and somehow the ball just goes right through him. So there's something at work there. I don't know what's going on. Something in the universe that means that Tosu have to beat Tokyo. And that was it. But that's all you can say about this game, because it was dreadful.
Yeah, as I said last week, as a Tokyo supporter, I had zero expectations of getting anything from this game. 5 minutes into stoppage time, Slovic has basically given Tosu all 3 points. You mentioned how long it's been since F. Marino has won away at Cerezo. Well, Tokyo's drought down in Tosu isn't quite as bad, but they haven't won there since 2015. And I think it's 8 straight in the league that Tokyo have lost to Tosu, both at Ajinomoto and indeed down in Tosu. So, Atsushi Kawata, a debut for Tosu to remember, but it's just an absolute horror show from Jakub Slovic. And I think we can move on and we can wrap up the episode. It was a game that deserved to finish 0-0 until Slovic had other ideas. All right, then. So that's all 9 games from J1 Match Day 6 rounded up, with the help, of course, of Chris and of Manny. So, we've got some Levain Cup in the week before Match Day 7 gets going on Saturday night with the Yokohama Derby. Yokohama F. Marinos hosting Yokohama FC at the Nissan Stadium. So then we have the other 8 games on Sunday, Sam. Some interesting looking ones on the slate. So what is Sam's pick of Sunday?
Yeah, I will leave the Yokohama Derby. I think that speaks for itself. And I think the one I have to look at is second versus third, and Nagoya against Urawa. Both teams in really good form. Reds may be in a slightly better form, and they go against Nagoya, who not necessarily firing on all cylinders, but getting results. But they're one cylinder down in this one, because Junker can't play against Reds. So it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt with that. But it should be a really interesting match. And both teams vying for a title. This is a really good place to put a marker down. If Reds can breach that Nagoya defence and get a victory here, it's a real a flag in the ground, isn't it, for the league. So I think this could be a really interesting match. It might not always be the most thrilling, but I think just in terms of intrigue, this is the one I would go for. Anything that you would like to pick out on Sunday?
Yeah, I'll go for Kobe Niigata. I think we might have some concerns about Niigata defensively with Michael Fitzgerald obviously suspended for this game, and we don't know if Chiba will be back. I'm not sure how long he's out for, but I think the way Niigata have played so far this season, they can provide a stern test for Vissel, the league leaders, and it'll be really interesting to see how that one pans out, whether Kobe will still be top after match day 7 is we'll certainly wait and see about that. There are plenty of interesting games on the slate on Sunday, and we'll be back to round them all up in next week's episode. All right then, Sam. So great to have some guests on board on this episode to help us out with this crazy round of fixtures and results, and more to come next weekend, I'm sure. So we'll speak to you after that.
Yeah, great to have Chris and Manny on, both really good guests, and it was great to see the J League Journey boys having a great day out and meeting Michael Skibber and co at the Convenient. Really good story. Hopefully more teams come out to go and see them in convenience stores throughout the season. But great to catch up with you. I hope you're enjoying your bit of time off this last couple of weeks, so hopefully that continues, and hopefully we'll then have a fantastic round of fixtures this weekend coming.
Indeed. Yes, the good times are just about up, Sam, but almost back into the swing of things. But we'll make the most of the last few days and try and enjoy this weekend of J1 action as well. Okay, so we'll leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Chris and Manny for joining us throughout this episode. And thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. And thanks to you listeners for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 match day 7. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes.